So Hare Krishna. So we're talking about Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, and verses 57 to 65. And before we go into the verses, I would just like to set the stage for discussion of Chaitanya Charitamrita, as it is considered to be postgraduate study in our institution, and it was Prabhupada's desire to be nominated in that manner as well. But why did Prabhupada call Chaitanya Charitamrita the postgraduate study? Because in one sense, when you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, the language is quite simplistic. It's conversational. It's very simple Bengali, and one can understand the dialect, one can understand the input. Then why is it postgraduate study? The answer to this question is to be found in the approach given by Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavad Gita. First and foremost, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, and in Bhagavad Gita, I'm just going to just want to read the... In Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, Krishna says very clearly, in it's a very well-known verse, where he says, Janma karma chame divyam, yom vetti tatvataha, tektva deham punarjanmam naiti mam, so Arjuna. So, Krishna is saying in this verse, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving his body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. In the Sanskrit, the word specifically used by Krishna, he's saying, evam o vetti tatvataha. Tatvataha is the word being used. So he is saying that if you want to understand me, you have to understand me on the basis of absolute consideration, not apparent consideration. Apparent consideration is the use of material senses to understand phenomena. One cannot understand Krishna through the use and perception of senses. One has to approach tattva. So he's saying, go approach tattva, tattvataha, and once you approach tattva, you will have a firm understanding of my activities, and by doing so, you would also qualify yourself to return back to Godhead. So he is insisting that one has to learn through absolute consideration. You know, this is a question I normally ask in every class, just to distinguish apparent versus absolute. I'm in England, so I don't need to distinguish the words, but just to be demonstrative. Perhaps I can just choose the Prabhu who is right back there. Do you believe I can see you quite clearly, Prabhu? Right there, near the door. You think I can see you? No, in fact, I cannot. Because my sight, you're quite blurred. I wouldn't be able to recognize you sitting from here because I'm not wearing my glasses. This is an apparent consideration where you believe that I can see you, but I can't in reality. This is apparent. So if we do understand the difference between apparent consideration where we make an assumption based on defective senses, then it is very dangerous and one can't really approach Krishna. But on the basis of absolute consideration, tattvataha, Krishna is practically telling us, go approach tattva. Now, further down in chapter 4, because chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita is all about transcendental knowledge, Krishna talks about how to approach him and how to understand tattva. And that is 4.34. In verse 4.34, it is tadviddhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshinaha. Again, the same word, tattva darshan, is being mentioned here. And Krishna is again insisting in verse 4.9 that you approach me through the understanding of tattva. And then he's saying, for you to understand tattva, you have to have absolute consideration and you need to approach someone who has seen tattva, and that is tattva darshinaha. Tattva darshinaha is a spiritual master and someone who has actually had a vision of what is the truth, what is absolute truth. It is this realized knowledge. And by having realized knowledge, tattva darshan, by surrender, you can understand me. This is the basis for our approach to philosophy. These two verses form the basis for our approach to philosophy. The objective is 4.9, and then how to approach the objective is being given by 4.34 in the Bhagavad Gita. Tattva darshan is through the lotus feet of the spiritual master. By sitting at the lotus feet of the spiritual master, we have the ability to receive tattva darshan. Now, the question is, what is real tattva darshan? The entire philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism has its roots and its foundation in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything that has practically been realized and written by our acharyas and been accepted is on the basis of tattva, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. There are so many wonderful realizations. All of these are derived from Srimad Bhagavatam. There's absolutely nothing else which is being held as a foundation. It is being held. Srimad Bhagavatam is the foundation for everything which our acharyas have written. Now, to approach Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a prerequisite. Not only one does have to sit at the lotus feet of the spiritual master and receive Tattva Darshan, one has to be able to be very objective oriented in wanting to be a premi bhakta. One has to have the objective of wanting to be completely situated in Krishna prema. When one has the objective and the only objective of wanting to chant the pure name of Krishna, which is prema, then one has the ability to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam has been specifically authored and I would say specifically given for the Gaudiya Vaishnava Parampara because we are focused completely on Krishna Prema. Srimad Bhagavatam is completely about Krishna Prema. One cannot understand Srimad Bhagavatam if one does not have the approach and the focus on Krishna Prema. There's absolutely no way one can understand it. So the idea is that one does the two steps in Bhagavad Gita, 4.9, 4.34, that is the fundamental education given in a moment. Then one approaches Srimad Bhagavatam in that mood, but the mood of Srimad Bhagavatam and the mood given in Srimad Bhagavad Gita has to be supplemented by an intense desire to improve our japa, intense desire to chant the pure name, having no other objective. This is given by Srila Rupa Goswami, Anyabhilashita Shunyam. Jnana Karmadi Anavritam Anukulina Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Ruttama. Bhakti, Uttama Bhakti, when it becomes the sole objective of a soul, complete sole objective, then that person has the ability to chant. They would focus on their chanting. And by chanting and calling upon the holy names, one develops the qualification to receive Tattva Darshan. One receives Tattva Darshan by sitting at the lotus feet of a spiritual master and then by his instruction, calling upon the holy name with the objective of wanting to chant Shuddha Naam, and by doing so, one derives the ability and the capability to read Srimad Bhagavatam and to understand the import and the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is complete. And Srimad Bhagavatam is written for the Premi Bhakta, one who has the objective of attaining Krishna Prema, and which is the objective of Gaur Leela, which is the objective of our movement, which is the objective with which Srila Prabhupada came down and gave us whatever he had to give. So if one were to develop such a focus on chanting the pure name and focusing completely, and this movement is about chanting, it has no other objective. We might think it has other objectives, it does not. This movement is about japa, this movement is about chanting of the holy names. Everything we do, be it giving a class, be it deity worship, worshipping the spiritual master, any service that we do, building institutions, preaching, has to do with the idea of being able to inculcate, encourage the chanting of the holy names. If that objective even is not kept as a focus, we would be moving away from the protection of Lord Chaitanya. This is the Yuga Dharma. There's no other objective. We should not confuse ourselves in our movement thinking that there are other objectives. This is the only objective. Chanting the holy names, because that's the Yuga Dharma. And improving the chanting of the holy names. Supplementing and helping ourselves by reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, one who has really chanted the holy names and has attained prema through the means of the holy names and has understood Srimad Bhagavatam has a certain pattern of behavior. That pattern of behavior is exhibited in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. If one does not understand that the purpose and the behavior of devotees who are chanting and who are premi bhaktas, who have understood Srimad Bhagavatam and have understood the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then their behavior changes. That behavior is exhibited in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That becomes postgraduate study. That's the reason why it is postgraduate study, because this is the behavior of those who have captured Krishna in their heart. This is the behavior of those to whom Krishna has become subservient. He has given himself 100%. These are devotees whose behavior cannot be understood unless one has similar objectives, unless one approaches the Srimad Bhagavatam in the mood given in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, 4.9, 4.34, then Srimad Bhagavatam with serious chanting, serious japa and dedication and helping others chant and spreading the movement, doing that. And then one can understand the mood of devotees in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Without understanding this, it's very difficult to understand the interactions of these elevated souls who are premi bhaktas. Who could understand that he could see a peacock feather and faint? What kind of an experience is this? You see? Who could understand this? You know, we hear about it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Who could understand this ecstasy of Lord Nityananda when he walks in Navadvip, where people become so mad with the love of Godhead that they uproot trees, even though they don't have physical strength to do so? Who could understand? Who could understand anything about the behavior of Premi Bhaktas without having a proper approach and having similar objectives, understanding they have already achieved what I want to achieve? And that's been given to me. The privilege of being able to chant the pure name is being exhibited in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and that privilege has been accorded to us. It's been given to us by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. That's why 4.9 and 4.34 become essential and extraordinarily important for us to be able to practically observe. Now, having said that, we want to understand the process of chanting. The process of chanting is given by Mahaprabhu, and what he has told us, that we should chant japa, but then the most important verse in his offering is the Sikshastakam. In the third verse of Sikshastakam, he says, Trinadapi sunichena, taroriva sahishnuna, amani manadena, kirtanya sadahari. And then he is defining that as the process. Every spiritual practice has a defined process. There are steps. The Ashtanga yogis have defined 8 steps. Yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara. Then they have dharana, dhyana, samadhi. They have these 8 steps for the Ashtanga yogi. They have a process. And then their process dictates that they have to observe certain regulations. They have to give up a few things. They have to accept a few things. And then they have to accept a certain environment. They have to reject a certain environment. And then they have to go and practice that. We have a process as well. Our process is quite unusual. And that process has been given by Mahaprabhu as to what is going to make us an efficient chanter. The efficient chanter in a movement is one who has completely understood Trinadapi Sunichena, Taro Riva Sahishnuna, Amani Manadena Kirtanya Sadahari. Now, what is that verse all about? How could it be having universal implications? How could it have applicability across all situations in life? Because, you know, the normal understanding, the normative understanding, which is the obvious understanding, is that one has to be very humble. Right, one has to be devoid of false pride. One has to be tolerant. And then one is able to chant. But then what is the hidden implication? What are the other aspects of being able to apply that verse? The applicable aspects of Trinadapi Sunichena, more importantly, is for us to be able to have the humility to accept life. Humility to accept life. Accepting the circumstances of life and the environment as being arranged by Krishna, by the holy names, for us to be able to chant the pure name. At any given step, the Premi Bhakta, whose only objective is to chant the pure name, would be looking at life and would be observing phenomena in life, as complex as they may be, and then accepting them as this is being arranged by Krishna. This is being arranged by Krishna because all I am asking for is to be able to chant the pure name. Since all I'm asking for is to be able to chant the pure name, he has created a situation which would help me surrender. And he would give me the opportunity for me to be able to accept the circumstance and to be able to call upon the holy names with seriousness. The circumstance of surrender need not be auspicious by definition of what we call auspicious and inauspicious in the material realm. It need not be. There's a common misconception that the objective of Krishna consciousness is peace. A very common objection, misconception. The objective of Krishna consciousness is prema. It is not peace. Peace is required to be able to chant, but peace is not an objective. If we have an objective of peace, we are aiming for the mode of goodness. Krishna consciousness is beyond transcendence. The mellows of Krishna consciousness is going to come beyond transcendence, not even within transcendence. Even if the jnani reaches Brahmabhuta Prasannatma, he crosses the material ocean, is situated in the spiritual sky, he has no access to Krishna. He has no access to Vrajabhakti. He doesn't. The Vaikuntha Bhaktas don't have access to Vrajabhakti. We notice that all around in Srimad Bhagavatam about the different levels of adhikar, the qualification for people to be able to understand that they can participate in Vrajabhakti. They don't. So the idea is that we do not want to make an assumption that there has to be a certain set of circumstances that have to come upon us in life which would allow us to chant. If our objective is to chant the holy names, and if our only objective is to completely accept the mission of Lord Chaitanya and to ultimately attain the gift, which is so rare, of being able to chant premanama. Then accepting the circumstances which come in life is merely a fact of Krishna making the special arrangements that are necessary for us to be able to move forward. Trinadapi sunichena taroriva sahishnuna amani manadena kirtane sadahari. Accept the circumstances of life as if they have been arranged by Krishna. Even if it is our own karmic reactions, which it is in most cases, we accept that the circumstances of life have been arranged by Krishna. The moment we have that acceptance, Krishna transforms the circumstances to our advantage to facilitate the pure chanting of the holy names, as intense as those circumstances may be. He will make this transformation. We buy a pound or 2 pounds of apples from the market for, few dollars or pounds or whatever it is. It's matter. We bring matter from the market and we place it before Krishna and then we chant prayers and then we beg him to accept it. He takes those apples, which are just matter, which are a part of the material phenomena. He accepts it. He transforms those apples into a spiritual phenomena which can benefit us. It becomes prasad. The same circumstances can be applied to life. That is Trinadapi Sunichena. So Mahaprabhu was not really talking about a code of behavior. He was not giving us code of conduct, which surely is a part of it. Because in the Krishna conscious movement, even in scriptures, Harinam Chintamani talks about it, that we are not so focused on secondary qualities. We are focused on the primary quality of complete dependence on Krishna. That is the whole focus. Complete dependence on Krishna is the focus of the movement and the process. The moment we start depending on Krishna, then the secondary qualities become wonderful. And what is the dependence on Krishna? First, it starts with being able to follow the strictures offered by 4.34, which is follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Accepting the circumstances. Accepting the circumstances arranged by Krishna, that, oh, you have arranged it. You have arranged it. You have arranged everything for me, and this is for me to be able to chant the pure name. We may not feel that way sincerely, but we can at least try making a statement. We can make a statement. That fulfills the purpose of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's process of chanting, because there are so many life circumstances which are so challenging. And our process is not so much that we constantly try and strive against that in certain ways. I mean, we have to do what is required to the best of our capacity, but the internal understanding and the mood has to be that I will do my very best as if it depends on me, but I will accept the results as if you have arranged it. And whatever you have arranged is going to help me chant better. Why would Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada make things difficult for us? It's just common sense. Why would they strive hard to make it so difficult? They wouldn't. In fact, the circumstances would be such that it would be supportive of what we need to do. And that is the whole purport of Trinadapi Sunichena. That's the process which Mahaprabhu gave. He gave us a very simple verse. He gave us 8 verses, completely self-sufficient to take us all the way from the beginning level right to the end, to be able to experience the highest level of expression of love to Krishna. So it's quite simple in one sense, very simple process. How simple could it be that you chant, associate with devotees who are also chanting seriously, and engage in service, eat nice prasadam, because that is the instruction of Srila Rupa Goswami, sevon mukehi jihvado. Seva has to begin with the tongue, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur translates it as that Golokir Premadan Harinam Sankirtan, the holy name, the pure name, descends from Goloka and dances on a purified tongue. And how is the tongue to be purified? The tongue is first purified by honoring Krishna Prasadam, and then we are supposed to engage in the chanting of the holy names. And then we keep accepting life as being arranged by the holy names to facilitate the better chanting of holy names. It's very simple. It's a straightforward, simple process. If we understand that the Lord is with us and He wants us to do this, which is a fact, which is what the whole theme is. Now, coming to Chaitanya Charitamrita, to the verse that we were supposed to speak about, because I just wanted to kind of talk about the principles of being able to approach and understand Chaitanya Charitamrita, because it's a very complex subject. It may seem very simple in language. It is far more complex to understand the behavior of exalted devotees than to understand the behavior of Krishna. Krishna's behavior is defined in the Shastra. Chaitanya Charitamrita was postgraduate because it's difficult to understand devotees who are in love with Krishna. Very difficult. Very difficult. Now, coming to Sri Advaita Chandra, who is also of Vishnu Tattva, we have first have to understand what is his position in the spiritual sky before we understand his position as Lord Advaita Chandra. In the spiritual sky, Krishna's first expansion is Balaram, and from Sri Balaram, you have Mula Sankarsana, Mahasankarsana. Mahasankarsana then expands into the three Purusha Avataras. The Purusha Avatara, the first Purusha Avatara is Karanodakashayi Vishnu. This is Vishnu who lies on the causal ocean, and then this is the description given in Bhagavatam, where every time he inhales and exhales, you have universes manifest and, you know, unmanifest. The lifetime of Brahma, Lord Brahma, is one inhalation or exhalation of Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu, who lies on the causal ocean. That's his lifespan. It's finished. Now, this particular personality, who is the Purusha Avatar, who is lying on the causal ocean, when the universes disintegrate at the end of the life of Lord Brahma, and then enter into the pose of skin of Mahavishnu, the jivas, the eternally conditioned souls who are part of such universes, were also absorbed into that process of becoming unmanifest in the material sky. After which, during the process of creation, the same personality, Sri Karanodakashayi Vishnu, who is also called Mahavishnu, glances over primordial nature. The personification of his glance, because everything has a personality in the spiritual world, the personification of the glance of Mahavishnu is Lord Shiva. The personification of Mahavishnu's glance is Lord Shiva. So, he glances at material nature, and that particular glance is with the objective of impregnating material nature with the souls who were previously entered along with him when he absorbed the universes. Now, the same personality in Gaur Leela comes down as Sri Advaita Acharya. The same personality comes down as Advaita Acharya. And as a consequence, because he has impregnated the material universe with souls, he takes on great responsibility of wanting to deliver these souls. That's where his compassion comes from. Because his original mission was, he impregnated the material universe, the souls have gone there, I have to bring them back. So he has immense compassion. The nature of Sri Advaita Acharya is immense compassion. What was the extent of his compassion? The extent of his compassion was that he could bring down Lord Chaitanya. He could commence Gaur Leela in all its glory. That was the extent of his compassion. Is it measurable? It is not. It is not. There's no measure to the extent of his compassion. And after he glanced at material nature, and he comes down as Advaita Acharya and takes on responsibility, one wonders what was his disqualification that he couldn't deliver us. He was Mahavishnu himself. He was non-different from the Lord. He is Vishnu Tattva. So what is it which prevented Sri Advaita Acharya to practically hold back and not deliver us? It's a question that comes up quite often in our minds, because he's Vishnu Tattva. Why was he on the banks of the Ganges? Why was he worshipping his Shaligram Shila and then weeping and begging for the Lord to descend as he saw the conditioned, the extraordinary suffering of the conditioned souls? What was it which motivated him? Why was he disqualified? It was not a disqualification. It was a simple fact that if Krishna Prema has to be given, it has to be given by Lord Chaitanya, because no one else has Krishna Prema. Krishna doesn't have it. Krishna does not have Krishna Prema. He doesn't. Only Lord Chaitanya has Krishna Prema. No one else has Krishna Prema. How do you give something that you do not have? Lord Chaitanya, we spoke about it in the Srimad Bhagavatam class a couple of days back. There is no difference between Lord Chaitanya Chandra and Krishna. There isn't any, but for one, Lord Chaitanya has prema, Krishna doesn't. That's the difference. Lord Chaitanya is a combination of himself and Srimati Radharani, who is his internal potency, and that is the reason for Lord Chaitanya to have an understanding of prema. That is Krishna having an understanding of prema because of the mercy of Srimati Radharani. And since no one, Sri Advaita Chandra, did not have prema, he wouldn't be able to give it, but he knew that he wanted to taste it himself. He would want to taste the mellows of Krishna prema. And that can only be given by one who has it, and that is Mahaprabhu. No one has Krishna Prema. No one except Mahaprabhu. Being a part of this movement is the greatest privilege anyone can even hope for. And that is the mood which Advaita Chandra worshipped. The privilege of being a part of Lord Chaitanya's movement was experienced by Mahavishnu himself. What to say of conditioned souls? What to say of us, you know, who are struggling in material nature, when the expansion, and who is Vishnu Tattva himself, has a deep desire to experience prema, and he wants Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to descend. This was the objective. He sits down on the banks of the Ganges and begins worship of Lord Chaitanya with great seriousness. He worships his... It is said there are two different versions. One is that when you go to Mayapur, you see that his Shila that he was worshipping was a Narsingha Shila. And then there's also that he was worshipping a Krishna Shila. So there are two different versions. But in any case, he was worshipping a Shaligram Shila. And he was drawing and bringing down the mercy of Lord Krishna Chaitanya. He was just bringing him down. He was asking him to come down because Lord Chaitanya has prema. The privilege of being able to chant the holy name was with Lord Chaitanya. The Yuga Dharma had to be inaugurated by one who was going to distribute prema. And Lord Chaitanya has prema. He comes down and he distributes prema. To distribute prema, he comes with his entire entourage. He comes with the spiritual abode of Navadvip. The entire spiritual abode of Navadvip descends, imbued with spiritual potency. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananji ki, Jai Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Right. So, he descends with his complete potency and he begins the mission. The mission of Lord Chaitanya began by first instructing his servants to accept Sri Nityananda Ram as a spiritual master. So Nityananda Ram became the spiritual master. And then Advaita Chandra, Sri Advaita Acharya, became the personification of the distribution of Krishna consciousness. He became the power and the potency to distribute. And this, when the mission began, Sri Krishna Chaitanya was completely isolated in Jagannath Puri. He chose Jagannath Puri because Lord Jagannath is the complete expression of Krishna. There is no other form of Krishna that is more developed in their expression of love than Jagannath. There isn't any. That's the reason why Jagannath Puri was chosen by Lord Chaitanya. He chose that particular kshetra because the form of the Lord was such that he was displaying a form, a rupa, an expression which was completely the highest expression of love and expression of emotion as expressed by Krishna. There's no one below, above Jagannath in terms of his expression. So Chaitanya Chandra decided to spend time in Jagannath Puri, and he was engaging in displaying very, very strict tenets of sannyas dharma as well when his dealings. He was very strict. He was actually externally behaving like Lord Ram. Lord Ram was very strict in following all the strictures and displaying certain behavior. Lord Chaitanya externally was behaving like Lord Ram. And the Shadbhuja Rupa, the picture which is shown here, which was displayed to Lord Nityananda, inspired Lord Nityananda to act as Lakshman. And Lakshman's mood is to experience pure dasya. It is Balaram who comes as Lakshman. And he vows that he would never ever become Lakshman because he cannot really taste the mellow of devotional service which goes beyond dasya. Because even as Ram's younger brother, Lakshman cannot experience anything other than pure dasya, but with a bond of brotherly love. Very different from Rajabhakti. Rajabhakti is very exclusive. It's very different. In Rajabhakti, there is Vishramba Bhav, where one equates oneself on the same platform with Krishna. The friends equate themselves. Krishna massages the lotus feet of his friends. The friends massage Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna eats the remnants left over by his friends. And then you have the parents directing Krishna. Krishna becomes subordinate to the wishes of his parents. So there is this equal and even subordinate emotion which is found in Vrajabhakti. But that is for those who are qualified. And that qualification was not even experienced by Mahavishnu when he was asking for Mahaprabhu to come. Advaita Chandra did not feel qualified that he had what it took to distribute the pure love of Godhead, which is found in Braja. So the expression of Vishramba is very rare. So in our particular system, we have been given an opportunity by the grace of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda to enter into this extraordinary confidential process of being able to attain Vraja Bhakti. And this Vraja Bhakti is so special that Mahavishnu himself feels despondent. He says, I can't handle this. It's way beyond me. And you see several instances in the Srimad Bhagavatam where you can reach the same conclusions. You can reach the same conclusions. So the purport here is, most importantly, for us to recognize that we have been given a very privileged position. It's almost as if, you know, if you're in the corporate environment, you know, you've been given the privilege of being able to listen in through a crack in the door when a board meeting is going on in a large organization. You know, it's a visual, right? It's such a privilege just to be able to listen. So people think, oh, what was going on there? What is going on inside? You know, I can't really understand what's going on inside. But the whole process of prema has been distributed by Lord Nityananda Ram as if everybody has a chance, and that is the Chaitanya Leela. Everybody has a chance. They do not discriminate. They are just distributing this extraordinary gift which even Mahavishnu, when he appears, did not feel privileged enough to be able to distribute. So the mood of the servants of Lord Chaitanya, since he has assumed an extraordinary strict demeanor of following the sannyas dharma externally. Internally, he's enjoying the most confidential mellows with his most personal servants. Now, in that particular mood, external behavior of a devotee has to approximate the servants of Lord Chaitanya. The most important servant of Lord Chaitanya is Lord Nityananda Ram. And Lord Nityananda Ram's behavior internally was that of Lakshman. Otherwise, Mahaprabhu could not have ordered him. He could not have ordered him. Go to Bengal, you know, you go and preach. How do you order someone whom you have honored as a spiritual master? So Mahaprabhu displays his Shadbhuja Rupa, which is found in the end of Adi Leela. This inspires Nityananda Ram to take on the mood of Dasa Dasanudas. And then our acharyas start writing to us saying, take on the mood of Dasa Dasanudas. That is how you have to participate in Gaur Leela. And once you participate in Gaur Leela, Dasa Dasanudas, and you further the mission of Lord Chaitanya, we automatically qualify for being able to enter into Vraja. There is no question of direct entrance into Vraja. There has to be participation in Gaur Leela. Gaur Leela participation is not in the groves of Vrindavan. It is here in the city of London and New York and wherever it is. Gaur Leela is what it is. Right, the Sankirtan devotees would understand. You have to do that. That is exactly what you need to do. You need to go out and distribute the holy names, and it has to happen in the concrete grounds of London, New York, wherever it is. This is Gaur Leela. The more seriously we take the distribution of the holy names, we qualify ourselves to be able to receive gifts. The reception of gifts will automatically occur. One does not have to make any special endeavor. It will automatically occur at a certain point. There has to be greed. That greed would come when we serve, because that greed is also a quality of purification. Just as much as we develop higher taste, param drishtva nivartate, we give up the lower, accept higher taste, the greed will come. The greed will come. Lord Chaitanya is capable of providing everything. The greed will come. The environment is such that he will provide us with the greed. I want to chant, he will provide us with the greed. This particular mood of being able to chant and wanting to chant and wanting to serve automatically brings us to the position of being able to rise above desires that are completely unqualified or disconnected from the desire of wanting to chant Shuddhanam. Now, I want to just clarify, what is Shuddhanam? Shuddhanam is the pure name, is the name of Krishna as it would be chanted in Vraja. How would his cowherd boy friends, who are extraordinarily in touch with Krishna in terms of their love, how would they call upon his name? What would be the level of separation they would feel when they call upon his name? What is the mood in which Mother Yashoda would call upon Krishna's name? What is the mood in which his other friends would call upon Krishna's name, the residents of Vraja? That is Shuddhanam, because there the identity of the devotee is completely certain. They have a very good idea of what is a sambandha. None of us need to really work on ourselves to understand who our parents were, right? We all know. And then we don't need to really work on ourselves for us to understand that, you know, someone has, if you're in the grihastha ashram, you have a wife or you're a child and so on ourselves. You know, we know the identity. We know the identity. We are very clear. And that allows us to perform action. Establishing a firm identity allows us to act according to the duties of that identity and be able to execute such duties. So, the most important aspect of Raja Bhakti is for the spiritual master to be able to give us sambandha gyan. That sambandha gyan of understanding who we are in relationship to Krishna would be revealed after the process of anartha nivritti. When one becomes fixed in nishta, at the stage of nishta, one realizes what is their sambandha. And it begins unfolding. All the information is not available, marginally available, then it starts unfolding. Because until the process of nishta, of becoming fixed in wanting the holy name, we are unqualified to know our connection with Krishna. Once the identity of the connection with Krishna starts flowering in the heart of the devotee in terms of information, that I have this relationship with Krishna, this is the mellow of attraction I have with Krishna, this is the personality who is inspiring me in Vraja, I have to follow in their footsteps, this is the role model, this is the kind of inspiration that comes in. Seva is very easy and chanting is very easy at that stage, because now you have an identity, therefore executing your duty based on the identity is not extraneous effort. It is extraneous effort because we don't really fully accept our connection with Krishna. We have other identities which are far more prominent in our lives. And our priorities are based on the other identities. That's reality. Our priorities are based on the other identities that we have already established that are in the physical manifested state, and we relate to this world based on the other identities. The identity that we have in Vraja with Krishna is yet to happen. At this stage, all we know for most people is Krishna is wanting us to be dasa-dasa-anudas. That's why acharyas keep talking about become a servant of the servant, servant of the servant. But then there is more. But the more part is revealed when one really becomes Dasa Dasa Anudas and dedicates himself to the mission of Lord Chaitanya and aspires to chant the pure name. Then when one says that every other identity I have in this world is subservient to the identity of wanting to know my relationship with Krishna, one becomes qualified. This is Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Raja. Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayasmi Masuchaha. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityajya. Dharma, which is the eternal duty or duty that is born of understanding our eternal nature, which is the actual definition. He says, give up all other chaladharma and upadharma, put everything else which is in the center to the periphery, put me in the center, and then relate to the entire world in the relationship of keeping me in the center. When we start doing that, keeping Krishna in the center and putting everything else to the periphery, it does not become inefficient, it actually becomes efficient. It becomes efficient. It becomes very efficient because there's now potency. Now we are really steering on the side of the current of bhakti. We really want bhakti, so we really are on the right side. So there really is, and we are in swimming upstream. If Krishna is not in the center and the other identities are in the center and we are basing life based on the other identities where Krishna has gone to the periphery saying that I will fix everything and then I'll get to chanting, it's not going to work because we are swimming upstream. All help is available if you swim with the current. And being with the current is to be able to understand that our eternal connection is with Krishna. Aspiring for it. Becoming greedy for it. Chanting with that particular aspiration in mind. And then we are able to cross over the ocean of anarthas. What is an anartha? That which has no meaning. How does it come? It comes because we have assumed an identity which is actually ineffective in being able to give us the ability to chant. When you work in a corporate environment, you are considered ineffective if you have assumed or not understood what it takes to do your duties. Someone has been given the duty of being a supervisor, a manager. And then he is called inept or she is called inept if they have not understood what it takes to be what it is to sit there. Life becomes quite problematic in such positions because they haven't quite understood what it takes to be sitting there. In a similar fashion, by our eternal conditioning and by our eternal nature, and by the fact that we have come so close to Raja Bhakti because of the Prabhupada's mercy, we are swimming upstream if we don't understand that our eternal identity is with Krishna, and we need to keep Gaurlila right in the center, put the other identities to the periphery, not neglect them, but put them to the periphery, do our very best in our terms of duty to facilitate that, while constantly keeping the central objective of wanting to finally be able to chant the pure name. To such a chanter, the gift of chanting the pure name is given. All help is available. All help is available. All help is available. All help. So that is the whole idea. The whole idea is that we establish a proper identity, we start chanting, and then we put everything else which doesn't matter to the periphery after due consideration. We don't neglect, but we put everything to the periphery, understanding a certain prioritization of life. Because this opportunity to be a part of Prabhupada's mission, I'm not sure if, who would take a chance? Who would take a chance with this? One has to be insane to take a chance with the opportunity that has been given. And it happens because we haven't understood the opportunity. The insanity comes because there's no understanding or poor understanding at best. That's why Krishna is saying, approach Tattvadarshis. Approach those who have seen the truth. And Srila Prabhupada has given us everything. He has given us the entire infrastructure required for us to be able to achieve the objective. And by doing so, one slowly, steadily makes progress and reaches the point of becoming fixed. When we are fixed, there are no distractions. There is no question that I have to fight against so many distractions to chant my rounds. There isn't. 80% of all our energy is going to go into chanting proper, nice, pure sound. Now, coming to the definition of Shuddhanam, after which we will stop and take questions. Shuddhanam, we spoke, is the name pronounced and called upon with the identity firmly established. The Sambandha Gyan of devotees in Raja is fully known to them, and in that particular relationship they call upon the name of Krishna, that is Shuddhanam, that is pure name. When we chant without offenses, that is Namabhas. When the identity is not fully known, but yet we chant without offenses, that is Namabhas. It's a dim reflection. That particular name is capable of granting us liberation, which is the objective of every other spiritual order. When we chant offenselessly, we are given an opportunity to attain liberation. That's the reason why devotees consider liberation to be completely tucha. Tucha is the word used in Sanskrit, where it is completely useless, to be discarded. Why? Because that comes to us when we just chant offenselessly. It's namabhas. And chanting offenselessly is not the objective. Attaining Sambandha Gyan is the objective. So the Sambandha Gyan, or the connection, what is, who am I, who am I, who is Krishna, what is the relationship, what is the service that I perform after the relationship is known, that becomes more and more clear. The chanting becomes stronger. The dedication becomes deeper. Easier does it become. But Krishna consciousness, we spoke about it in a previous class as well. Krishna consciousness is not where you walk on a plain field, where it's a plain field, you keep just walking straight. There are no bumps, there are no potholes, everything is smooth. That's not Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is a climb. It's a mountain peak. We really are aiming for the sky. We are aiming for the sky, far beyond anybody's capacity to aim for. So it's a climb. So we climb from one stage to the other, one stage to the other, when we reflect on what is being given at each and every stage. And we do not become complacent. If the effort put into japa, if the effort put into service, effort put into reading shastra, effort put into everything else is the same as what was done the previous year, we shouldn't be expecting new results this year. It's common sense. Because Krishna consciousness is a climb. You go from one stage to the other and you ask for more and more, because that's exactly how we are supposed to, but we also intensify our effort, intensify our focus. That's expected. And that's expected in the material world as well, if you want to make achievements. So why is it so unusual that when we want to attain the highest gift, which even Sri Mahavishnu, as Advaita Chandra, was clamoring for, sitting on the banks of the Ganges, why would we think that it should be easy? Right? It's quite an intense approach. And that intensity is the hallmark of devotees who surround Krishna. This is one of his 64 qualities. The devotees of Krishna are very intense. The devotees of Lord Gauranga are very, very intense. More intense than the devotees of Krishna, perhaps. Okay, so that is the objective. So I guess I touched upon so many things, I think I completely lost myself, so I can't even summarize. So I'm just going to quickly give you a summary and then I'll stop and I'll take questions. So we started out by wanting to glorify Sri Advaita Chandra, but before glorifying Advaita Chandra, we wanted to understand how to approach Chaitanya Charitamrita. We took reference from the Bhagavad Gita, which is the reason why Bhagavad Gita is studied first. It teaches you how to approach Krishna and the activities of Krishna. You took a reference from 4.9, 4.34. We went to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, there is complete darshan. It is the basis for and the foundation of everything that we do in Krishna consciousness. The devotees of Chaitanya Charitamrita are those who have relished Srimad Bhagavatam, are living the Srimad Bhagavatam. They are in prema. To understand them would be very difficult unless we make an attempt. The attempt itself is to chant, and Mahaprabhu has given us the process as Trinadapi Sunichena. The reason why Trinadapi Sunichena is important is because we have challenges, which is a fact. Material life is very complex. And we need to be able to accept the arrangements made by Krishna, understanding that if we are chanting sincerely and a certain arrangement is coming by, Krishna has a role to play in it. The holy names have a role to play in it. We accept it, and then we accept it, and we act on it with courage. And then we move forward, and we chant. And by doing so, we also keep Krishna and the mission of Lord Chaitanya in the center. We properly prioritize the other identities that we have established in this world. And then we proceed further and we reach the stage of being able to be completely free of anarthas. That would also allow us to be free of aparad. Namaparad ends when anartha nivritti ends for most part. And then one chants offenselessly. And when one chants offenselessly, then one has the ability to accelerate in leaps and bounds. And when one accelerates in leaps and bounds, the gift comes pretty quick. And there's even greater enthusiasm. So climbing becomes even more easier. So Krishna consciousness is a very dynamic process. It has to be intensified. It cannot be regressed. One cannot really think that you're walking on a plane, you're climbing a mountain. And one needs to intensify on a year-by-year basis. One has to be goal-oriented, where we are setting goals, and we are establishing goals that can be calibrated, and we move forward. People in the mundane arena, they do it so well. Why is it that the athletes and the other performers, they do it so well? And why is it that we have such a lofty goal and we don't apply principles of being able to measure where we are and what the goal is and whether we have increased or decreased our intensity? We need to be able to do that as well. So I'll stop right here and see if we have any questions, comments.